To make superior wine in Napa Valley, you are required to navigate a maze. I'll give you a clue. You're going to want to take this journey. Well, Paul, we are absolutely humbled and delighted to learn more about you, learn more about Maize, and we have a beautiful day here in Napa. So walk me through that journey of a UK, Ireland-born individual now here in Napa Valley making some of the finest wine in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it wouldn't be your standard route. I certainly, you know, my background is quite different, and I never really envisaged myself living in California and doing what I'm doing now. So my background was in media. I did a media degree at college and then went on to work for actually a French advertising agency back in Europe. And, you know, when I first started with that, I found myself going to these client dinners and I would be kind of sat at the end of the table.
Right.
And, you know, this young guy coming out of college, you know, 22, 23, no one really, I quickly discovered that no one really was that interested in what I had to say. I think I was there as the note taker, as it were. But I would kind of look at this, the guy that was choosing the wine every night at these dinners, and he was the one that kind of commanded everyone's attention for certainly 5 minutes. So I kind of quickly figured out that I needed to be that guy. That's how I get my voice heard. So I started to you know, try and figure out how to learn more about wines. And I found the WSET, the Wine and Spirits Education Trust, and started at the beginning with them. And after work, I would do, you know, in the evenings, these wine classes, started out the very beginners, and kind of went as far as I could with them, and just really, really enjoyed it. You know, I'm a bit of a history geek. So, you know, what I loved about wine, I think mostly was the history behind it.
Sure.
And, you know, there's such a vast history behind it. So that was fascinating to me. And from there, I kind of said to myself, well, maybe I could start making something a bit more out of this and make it, you know, into somewhat of a career. So I started a small, very small wine importing business back in Ireland. And I was importing, you know, boutique wines from around the world, specifically, you know, and mainly from South Africa. I spent a lot of time down there, Argentina, South France, a little bit from California. And what I was trying to do was, you know, expose, you know, Ireland to some of these great wineries that we wouldn't have seen before. You know, we had the big names, and no, not that there's anything wrong with those big names. You know, they're fantastic, but I just felt like there were so many smaller wineries that, you know, I just thought people should try. So I kind of went from there. And, you know, having done all my WSET classes and all that kind of theoretical side, I really wanted to see what it was like, the physical side of winemaking, and, you know, never with any intention of making my own wine. It really was just, you know, to give myself that other, you know, education in that side of things.
Well, what, because you mentioned South Africa and you mentioned south of France, and then you also had a little bit of wine from California. Mm-hmm. So when you wanted to get the production side of things and get your hands dirty, as they say, you reached out to some friends in the California region. And what drew you here?
Well, it was really, you know, it was just the timing. It just so happened. I said to myself, I would either do a harvest in California or South Africa, because they were kind of the regions I was, you know, like I said, there was the other regions I was doing, but I was concentrating more on those two regions. So I kind of said to myself, it would make sense to do a harvest in either one of those. And the one that was coming up first was California, obviously, because, you know, South Africa being in the Southern Hemisphere, that wouldn't have come till the following spring.
Right.
So I just happened to have a family friend that was working, another Irish guy. He works at, or runs a wine store in Yountville. And so I reached out to him, sent him an email, and just said, do you know anyone that might need an extra pair of hands to come out and do a harvest? You know, not looking to get paid, not looking, you know, for anything like that. Anything more than just the experience. So he put me in touch with Mark Herald's assistant winemaker. And we kind of figured out that, you know, they could use an extra pair of hands. So that was it. In 2009, I came out and I did a harvest there, you know, working alongside Mark and other winemakers as well. It was in a custom crush facility. It was mostly with Mark, but, you know, there was other winemakers that were making wines there as well. And it kind of went from there. So,
well, and it's interesting because there's any number of winemakers and great winemakers all throughout the valley. And then there's, I think, an echelon of prized and notorious winemakers, of which Mark is certainly in that class.
Yeah.
And he saw something in you.
Yeah, it was funny, really. You know, I had absolutely no experience, obviously, in the production side of things. And, you know, he's a big man, and you know, he's a big presence, you know, because he's like you said, he's got this fantastic reputation in winemaking, which you know, precedes him. But he's very softly spoken, and, you know, he would kind of, he'd be in the winery and he would always take time out of his day to come over and say hello to me and kind of check in on me. And you know, he would come over and, he'd, you know, this very soft way, he'd say, you know, Paul, how are you doing? And are you eating okay? And, you know, you seem like you're losing weight. And I was like, well, you know, it's pretty intense this work.
Right. These barrels aren't light.
Yeah. And, you know, he'd ask, are you staying in regular contact with family and friends at home? And, you know, I just thought that was really sweet, you know, that he would take such an interest. You know, of course, it's his busiest time of the year, but to be able to take that time to kind of, you know, to make sure that I was doing okay. And it was him that suggested that I kind of take it a step further and maybe think about making my own wine. And he said to me, Paul, you seem to have a real passion for this. You seem to be really enjoying this. Would you ever consider, you know, trying to make your own wine? And I said, well, you know, it would be a fantastic, you know, to be able to do that. And what, you know, what a dream. But this, you know, three major problems as I see it, you know, access to good fruit, I do not have, no access to great French oak barrels. And quite frankly, you know, finance. I can't finance it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he kind of turned around and he said, he kind of thought about that and he turned around and he said, well, I can help you with the first two, maybe, you know, call home for the third. So I did, you know, my dad had recently retired and, you know, my dad's not very good at doing, you know, nothing, as it were. He went from, you know, working in media as well, and you know, being so busy and so focused on his career and, you know, constantly working, and then all of a sudden he's doing nothing, and yeah, he wasn't good at that. And
no, I don't know many people that are good at building a huge business,
right,
in an industry over 30 or 40 years and then stopping cold.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, I think, you know, my mum was she was looking for him to have a distraction. She was like, Paul, he's getting under my feet quite a bit. I'm not used to this, you know. So I broached it with him and I said, Dad, you know, I know you've been looking for something, and I know you've, you know, he always had a huge interest in wine. He loves wine. It was always something that was present in the house. And, you know, I said to him, I've been kind of given this opportunity, you know, if you'd be interested in kind of helping me out with it, you know, to kind of fund the first few years to get it on its feet. And, you know, he said to me, well, go away and do me some figures. So I'd be in the winery all day, you know, working this harvest, and I'd get home late at night and I'd sit there on my laptop, you know, with my kind of eyes kind of prized open with toothpicks, trying to write somewhat of a business plan and, you know, financials for him and a financial projection. Finally got that over to him. He sent it off to his accountant, who of course took 25% off my figures, as any good accountant would. And he came back and he said, well, Paul, I don't think we're going to make a huge amount of money off this, but I think we could have a lot of fun. So he said, sure, you know, if you can get the fruit and you can get some barrels, let's do it. And that was year one, 2009. And like I said, we started off very small, 200 cases. And really, you know, I wasn't so sure that it was ever going to be something beyond, you know, this small project that I would have on the side, you know, and I would probably import a lot of this into Ireland and sell it myself. And then when we bottled our first vintage in 2011, that's when I moved out full time. And you know, I thought to myself, I'd love to kind of progress this and make a bit more wine. And, you know, slowly each year we added on. And
well, and you're still very, very small production.
Yeah.
But one of the things I think most people will marvel at and really appreciate is Mark's contacts and the fruit source that you've chosen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so Stagecoach Vineyard is legendary.
Yes, absolutely. And we've been lucky enough to, we you know, I feel like we when we started the project, we were already kind of three or four rungs up the ladder. You know, we were given this access to these great vineyards, and, you know, Mark had these great relationships with these people, the vineyard owners and so forth. And, you know, to be able to get access to those vineyards in your first vintage is kind of unheard of. So,
right,
you know, I feel so fortunate, you know, for all of these kind of things that, you know, kind of fell into place for me. Obviously, you know, meeting Mark and you know, getting that help from him on that side of things, with him coming on and consulting for the brand. You know, my father showing kind of faith in me and saying, I'm prepared to kind of give you that, you know, financial support to get you started. I was very lucky, you know, I must say.
And let's talk a little bit about your vision for the brand. Mm-hmm. You've got Maize and Clue.
Mm-hmm.
Walk us through kind of the idea, the origin, and where you want to take it with these incredible fruit sources, with the two varietals that you're featuring. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. So Maize, our Maize Cabernet, this is our flagship wine. This is the first wine we made. In the first year, it was just the Maize Cabernet we started out with. As I said, 200 cases of it. And in the first year, you know, it was such small production. We were getting fruit from Stagecoach Vineyard, but we were also getting fruit from two small vineyards in Coombsville. But, you know, such small amounts from each of these vineyards that everything was blended together to make a cab. And it wasn't until the 2010 vintage, and myself and Mark were sitting down and we were doing our blending, you know, 3 or 4 months before bottling. And, you know, we decided we were going to maybe make a second cab, and we were going to keep the Coombsville fruit separate from the Stagecoach fruit. And I was a bit nervous about that at first, thinking it's only our second vintage, and you know, to suddenly have another cab coming out, you know, they need to be, you know, different enough that people, you know, can see that there is a difference, but also made in the same style that people could connect them to, you know, the two together. So, you know, we did that, and you know, I'm delighted now that we did, and we've kept the two separate, and they are two standalone wines, and they really have their own characters. But that kind of presented us with a problem in the sense that we had to come up with a second name. And, you know, when we first came up with the name for Maize, that was one of the hardest parts. You know, we had got about 18 months into the project and we still didn't have a name. You know, the wine was in barrel and you keep thinking, well,
what are we going to call it?
You know, exactly. And I'd been working with this label designer trying to come up with a concept, and, you know, he was starting to panic a little bit as well. And he said, Paul, I need something, you know, I've got to design something. We've got to get it, you know, squared off with TTB and, you know, make sure that there's no conflicts and get these labels printed. You're bottling, right. You know, pretty soon. Yeah. So when we did that, you know, we'd gone through so many different names, and we'd gone the French route, we'd gone the Latin route, and you know, I'd finally decided that I wanted to do something contemporary. You know, we're a new brand. But yeah, it was really coming down to the wire. We must have come up with 300 different names that we just weren't completely happy with. And then one afternoon, we're sitting down at his house, myself and the label designer. He's kind of doodling on a pad, and we're just talking, and he's kind of trying to come up with more about our story. He said, tell me a bit more about your background and your story. And, you know, as we're talking, like I said, he's just doodling on this pad, and I kind of looked at it and I said, that's it. And he said, what? And I said, what you've just drawn. He said, well, I haven't drawn anything. I said, you've drawn a maze. And he said, okay, I haven't. I said, like a labyrinth, you know. He said, okay, well, how does that fit? And I said, well, I suppose, you know, if you actually look at the design he came up with to finish it, there's a line or a path leading into the maze. And I said, well, that's kind of like our background and our story. You know, we came from this completely different part of the world, you know, both originally from a media background. We're kind of finding our way along this path into this maze of winemaking and the wine world, and hoping to find our way out the other side. So that was the thinking behind Maize. So I was delighted, you know, we had a concept, we had a name, finally. But then, as I said, in 2012, because it was the 2010 blending we were doing, you know, I quickly realized we're going to need another name. And my dad happened to be visiting about a week after the blending. So, you know, I kind of said to him, Dad, you know, let's go out and you know, I realized I had to break this to him, this news. So I brought him to an Irish bar in Sonoma, you know, my dad being Irish, I thought it was a good place as any. And we're sitting there and I thought, you know, let's ease him into this. Let's get a couple of Guinnesses in front of us. And I said, Dad, brace yourself. I've got some news. And he was panicked and he said, oh God, what is it? You know, is everything okay? And I said, yeah, everything's fine. And I said, but we're going to make a second cab this year. He said, oh, I thought it was something serious. And I said, well, it is, you know, we're in that position as we were before, you know, all over again. We've only got 4 months till bottling and we need another name. We need another label design. We need another concept. And straight away he said, Clue. And I said, like C-L-U-E. And he said, no, C-L-E-W. It's the derivative of the word clue, C-L-U-E. I said, well, what does that mean? I've never heard that word. And he said, well, clue is actually an old English and Irish word for a ball of twine or a ball of string. And I said, again, great, but how does that fit? And he said, well, when Theseus was sent to fight the Minotaur in ancient Crete, his one true love, Ariadne, gave him a clue of golden twine to find his way back out of the maze. So I said, that's fantastic. I love it. And I love the fact that it was a four-letter word. It was going to be symmetrical. I could see it on the label.
Yep.
So there and then, sitting on that bar stool in Sonoma, I called our attorney's office, who has a guy who specializes in trademarking and so forth. And I said, can you do a name check? Make sure no one's got it. You know, make sure there's no conflicts. And he said, yeah, what is it? And I said, Clue. And he said, C-L-U-E. And I said, nope, that's what I thought, but it's C-L-E-W. I'll explain the story afterwards. You know, I was so panicked. And I just wanted to get this name, you know, kind of
registered,
squared away.
Yeah.
So yeah, about a pint or two later, I get this phone call and it's the guy. And he said, yeah, we're good. There's no conflicts. So I said, right, you know, square it away now, we'll take it. And we celebrated with another pint of Guinness.
It's wouldn't be the first meeting that concluded with the great output that started with a couple pints,
there,
right?
There you go, exactly, yeah.
Well, where do you see yourself in 2 years, 3 years? What do you want to get the production level to? You want to stay small? You want to grow big? You want to be the premier winemaker in all of Ireland?
You know, when I first started the project, I had this kind of figure in mind with my cabs. I said I would kind of tail off around 1,000 cases across the two of them. And we're there now and then some. You know, 2018, which is in barrel at the moment, and we'll bottle next year. That was our biggest vintage to date. And, you know, it was a bigger vintage across the valley. We'd had a lot of those early rains, which was great. And, you know, the yields were higher.
Right.
So that's going to be our biggest vintage. And we're between the two cabs, it's going to be about 1,300, 1,400 cases. And I think that is kind of where I would kind of want to tail off with these two, with this particular brand. And, you know, that's kind of the number I'm happy with. you know, I think we could make more and we could add some, you know, some fruit from different sources and so forth, but I kind of don't want to, I don't want to mess with it. You know, I'm really happy with the blends that we have, and, you know, we've been using the same, as I said, vineyards since the beginning, and I just don't want to change that. You know, I don't want to change the character of the wine and compromise that, even though, you know, I'm sure we could get access to some fantastic vineyards and like I said, to add to the production, but I'm just really happy with the way the wines are at the moment. So I think we're going to stay there, and on the Sauvignon Blanc we make about 300, 400 cases, and yeah, you know, I'm happy with that as well. So,
and I know you started with Mark, and now you have Mike.
Yeah.
And so you're Mike's helping move the brand forward.
Yeah.
And his philosophy, very similar, just extract the best fruit possible.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mike Kirby, great winemaker as well. And I actually met him the first year when I was making wine with Mark. He was making wine for some clients at the same Custom Crush where we were making a lot of wine. Just a great guy, fantastic winemaker, you know, when we decided to kind of move forward with Mike, it was seamless. It was really easy, a really easy progression in that sense. And you know, the first question he asked me is, you know, is there anything you want to do differently? I said, no, I love what Mark has done. I love what he's created here. So if we can, you know, I don't want to change anything really. I'm really happy with the. You know, with our fruit sources, I'm really happy with the style of wine we're making. And so we've just carried on trying to do things that way. I think, you know, I would be scared to kind of change things up too much. I feel like we would alienate, you know, our customers. And
plus, I don't know how much more stress your dad can take with these surprises.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there's enough Guinness in the world to give many more of those, but...
Well, we are absolutely delighted to share this with our supporters, and based upon the points, the national recognition you have obtained so far, it looks like you're on a trajectory that is going to be second to none, so thanks
for
sharing.
Of course, thank you. Cheers. How would you say in Ireland? Sláinte.
Sláinte. Phenomenal time today with Paul. The wine is spectacular, and see what happens when you have a meeting over a couple of pints? Thank you so much for all your support.